Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. He's just cleaned his penis with a willy brush. Will you please welcome Richard Herring? Thank you very much. Thank you. A reference to the pre-show banter there for the people at home. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapa. Oh, look at that. It's like they've been primed. It's amazing. We've got a fantastic guest, Adam Buxton, coming up. But first, I will attempt some stand-up. It's not as good as the stuff I just did. I will mention that I asked last week for people to send in essays about the Mick Jagger, Frankie Boyle, Dave Gorman's Ringo Starr conundrum that was discussed at length. I only got one essay from Raoul Siegel, which may not be his real name. It's a poor effort. It's only 2 sides of A4 long. I would have given it maybe D-, but as it's the only entry, he is one. He doesn't give his address, so he hasn't won anything. But my favourite thing about it is that all the way through, he refers to Mick Jagger as Muck Jagger, as if he's a Scottish man. The people here knew about that already, which is why it didn't get as big a laugh as you were expecting. You thought that's funnier than the people in Leicester Square Theatre. I've read the whole thing out. We might put that out as an extra podcast for you because it's a very interesting prognosis. Lord McAlpine is in the news. He is not a paedophile. He's the non-paedophile. He's unusual amongst conservative politicians. In that he has decided to sue people who've got... That's why this is unusual. He's decided to sue people who've tweeted about him. I think in a fair enough way, because I think if he does... It's all right. It's one thing joking around on Twitter and making a joke or in a podcast. But to just... That's one thing, that is fine. But just to state openly that someone is guilty of a terrible crime is one thing. But he's a terrible thing. But he's going to sue anyone who's tweeted, apparently this is what he's planning on doing, for £5. So if you tweeted or retweeted that, he will sue you and you'll have to give £5 to a children's charity. And it's nice to see that a non-paedophile can do charity work. That makes me feel a lot better. So Lord McAlpine is doing some great work for people who just do charity work because they're nice people. They don't even want to fuck kids. They're just doing it because they think, let's give some money to disadvantaged people. That's a nice thing to do. But £5, I think, is quite good value for libeling someone. That's not so bad. In fact, you know, I was thinking, you know, which Tory MP do I want to falsely accuse of being a paedophile now? And I just thought, well, actually, £5, I mean, I could do all of the Tory MPs. I'm just going to say all Tory MPs are paedophiles. That's my plan. I'm happy to pay £5. That'll be about £2,500. But the thing is, some of them probably are paedophiles, so they won't be able to sue me back. So it's not even... In a sense, if you think about it, the people who don't sue me are sort of saying that they are paedophiles, so... It's a good way of flushing them out. This is the way to find the real one. So if any... let's say all of the MPs, let's make it fair, because I don't really trust the Liberals anymore. So let's say all MPs are paedophiles. That's 650 people who can sue me. Any of them don't sue me for £5. Well, we know now. We've done a useful service. My wife was away on Saturday night, so I've been kind of... on my own, single man again, on a Saturday night. So what I did the things that I'm not allowed to do when my wife is around. I sat in my pants watching The Colditz Story, the 1960s film, eating pickled onions. And that was... It was amazing. I'm not allowed to eat them. She doesn't mind me eating pickled onions. It's just these particular ones I eat really make me fart badly. So really, I mean really badly. I did a fart in the night that... It was a kind of a Dutch oven affair, but it was actually woke us both up the last time I ate these. But annoyingly, this time I didn't get that. So I ate the pickled onions and I was kind of looking forward to luxuriating the night and it's a smell, you know, sometimes when you fart, disgust yourself, but you're still quite proud of them. Didn't get it. In fact, it's like my body knew, because when my wife returned, I started getting a little bit flatulent again. It's like my body knows. So that was fun. That was a fun way to spend the night. Oh, of course, we've had other news, other paedophile, not paedophile news, other celebrities in trouble news. We've had Justin Lee Collins, Dave Lee Travis, Jamie Lee Curtis is shitting herself. I'm telling you, that's the... Anyone with Lee in their name, I think you should watch out for. That's all I'm saying. They might start wanking you off with the ventriloquist dummy. They might shoot you if you're the president. Just watch out for them. It's the middle name, guaranteed. Guaranteed something's going on. Neither of those people have just... I mean, Dave Lee Travis, he's only alleged to have touched up some women. He's made it very clear that's right. He would never do that other thing, and he hasn't done that either. That is his defence, which is a good defence. I want to make it clear I would never do that, and I didn't do the thing they said either. maybe I'll edit that out. So I've really started worrying. I hate listening back to these podcasts because I think I'm an idiot, and it annoys me the way I laugh at stuff, and I think... Oh, I just think, I mean, I don't understand why any of you like me. You're idiots, but thank you for liking me. But I listened back to the Adam Buxton show I did at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I said some... I mean, that was the end of the Edinburgh Fringe. I was a bit kind of loose-tongued. I said some terrible things. And now this has happened. I'm starting to think, God, retrospectively, I'm in all kinds of trouble. So, fuck it. But the best advice I can give... to any perspective, and I did say this about in the last podcast, but before it went out, I think David Mitchell treated me the best in the interview. I think the way you have to be interviewed by me is to treat me as if I'm a quite intelligent 5-year-old child. That is, I think that is, and that's what he did. And so you kind of answer the questions as they're put to you, not like a six-year-old, an intelligent 5-year-old. That's why I'm... Oh, the other thing I've got is, I'll give this a little go. I haven't really planned this, but I've got a new iPhone. I've got the iPhone 5, yeah, very exciting, and so it means for the first time ever I have Siri, which I've never had before. The kind of assist, this robot assistant. You like this old box robot man, RoboBox. This is incredible. So you can ask it questions and then it will do. I'm actually talking to it now, so that's better. But I, this is the first, one of the first things I said is, when is Talking Cock on in London?
It's Monday.
Oh. No, that's the wrong. That's, he says it's Monday, 19th of November, 2012 in London. That's the today's date. He's let us down. When is Talking Cock on in London? You've tricked me, Siri, because every other time I've done this to you, it's like you know where we are. When is Talking Cock on?
I didn't find any events.
I can't find any events about Talking Cock Ram, Richard. Like, it usually chastises me for being rude. And now it's made what I've said much ruder than it was. You're talking cock is fine. Talking cock ram. It's like some terrible forced sex show I'm doing. You're a stupid fucker, Siri.
Well, I'm still here for you.
Well, I'm still here for you. I just like the idea that someone has programmed, it hasn't done it because typically now, but when he was sort of telling me off for swearing, someone sat in an office like you kind of thinking, what's the every swear word we have to put this in? I'm going to ask it this, see what happens. Siri, if you had to have a ham hand or an armpit that dispensed sun cream, which would you choose?
Like me to search the web for, is it?
You didn't even get the whole question, is it? I'm going to give it one more try. There's a very funny video of Marek Larwood doing much better with a Siri that you must Google and check out. It's a shame he's done that because this just looks weak by comparison. Which is better, a ham hand or an armpit that dispenses sun cream? It does better on, it's like on stage. It gets a little bit more confident. It's like, I'll do it on the night, Siri. That's how he, when I've done that at home, no interest at all. Anyway, look, we're going to crack on with the actual podcast. It is a delight to have this guest on. You will probably best know him best. He was Barry in Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, the remake. We'll be talking about that. He gets to ask about that all the time. We're going to get that out of the way very quickly. Will you please welcome Adam Buxton, ladies and gentlemen? Adam Buxton, he's gone to the toilet. There you go. Oh, you know, that's, you can, you've got a microphone there. He's brought his own microphone on. That's how confident he is. Hooray, he's got a beer. He's drinking beer. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, thank you. You got your coat on?
Got my coat on.
You won't
yeah.
feel the benefit of that outside now.
I'm ready, ready in case things go badly. I'm good. What are you doing? Why are you filming me?
That's Mary Jane. I know everyone.
I'm just joking, Mary. You can film the heck out of this thing.
You can film
right?
me if you want. We don't care.
Because it's going to be amazing. It's going to be an amazing film. When will you watch it back, though? Guys, so Tuesday, come over, because I filmed the whole of this podcast from the front. It's great. We're going to watch it. What? Don't talk during the filming of the podcast on my iPhone. It's my favorite film. It's great. It's not in surround or anything like that, but it's wonderful. I'm going to burn it off to DVDs and distribute it to all my friends.
Slightly unusual angle. Just one camera angle. Two men talking for, could be 90, 100 minutes. You know, we might push through to 120 today.
That's what it's like, though, out in the world of illegal downloading. People think nothing of that kind of, yeah, they'll happily download Prometheus with people just getting up, wandering around. The sound sounds as if it's just like that.
Yeah,
no problem. Let's you know, spunk some bandwidth. Is that a cool thing to say?
It promotes terrorism, though, somehow, doesn't it, these DVDs? The terrorists don't work very hard on... They should work a bit harder on producing... good quality DVD copies, I think. Then they
exactly.
wouldn't make more money.
Yeah, exactly. And then they would be indistinguishable from the sell-through ones. What would that do? That would plunge the world into confusion.
And probably destroy the economy of the West.
Yeah, there is that. I don't really care that much, though. I sometimes, my policy... Have you ever illegally downloaded anything?
Yes. You don't do it with any of my stuff.
Well, you see, I disagree. I strongly promote the illegal downloading of anything that I've ever been involved with.
Right.
Because I don't make any money from it anyway. So I couldn't give a fuck. I think people are very welcome. I'm sort of flattered and delighted if anyone would spend any amount of time trying to download anything that I'd ever done. The only thing that I think is commercially available that I've done is the Adam and Joe DVD, which was a, you know, sort of a compilation, not even the whole set of the series that we done on Channel 4.
I'm the king of grammar.
My wife has a copy of this DVD.
Right.
I never really watched
when
you were on.
I'm very proud of it.
I should probably have watched it. I've watched a bit of it. Because I was interviewing you, I probably should have watched all of it.
Don't worry about it. We spent a lot of time. It's a beautiful object.
Yeah.
And we agonized and worried about every aspect of it visually and designed it all ourselves and were twattish about it. So I think, you know, people are probably well advised to go and buy that actual thing, you know. But if they want to see it really badly and just download bits of it, fine, I'm not fussed.
I think it means you become a fan. I mean, I download Breaking Bad, like the current ones you can't get. But
right.
Then I will buy that when it comes out.
Yeah, exactly. So. I've done that same kind of thing myself in another life. I wouldn't admit to it. I mean, I've imagined doing it.
Careful, you can get sued for anything now. Well, let's quickly get out of the way because you'll be asked about this all the time.
Yeah.
How was it being Barry in Randall and Hopkirk? This is...
It
the
was.
2001 remake of the...
It was very nerve-wracking. I like to fall at hurdles.
Yeah.
That would be my Indian name. If I had like a Native American Indian name, it would be Falls at Hurdles. Because I never rise to any challenge whatsoever. And any time I get an opportunity or I'm in an exciting environment,
yeah.
I fuck it up. And I underwhelm. And that was one of my first acting jobs, you know, and I've always liked the idea of being an actor and always wanted to act, you know. And I've intermittently got these little opportunities, and that was one of the very first, thanks to Charlie Higson, who was writing and directing that show, I think. So I was really excited about it, and then turned up, and, you know, Vic and Bob are there, all my heroes in one place at the same time. I didn't have much to do. I think all I had to do was go up some stairs, I think, in Revenge of the Bog People. I was a security guard, and just went up the stairs. Charlie Higson sort of said, do you want to do anything else? Have you got any other kind of stuff you want to do to make it more funny or anything? Nah. I'm all right. I'm fine. I couldn't think of anything. Because I didn't feel as if I was in a position to unveil some amazing shtick. You know what I mean?
You could have tripped on every single step.
Yeah.
In the back of us. Just every single time.
That's right.
Up.
Or my trousers would gradually fall down, revealing my genitals by the top of the staircase. What about that, Charlie? Yeah, it's not really right for the slot that we have. But thanks. I sort of felt confused by why I was there in the first place, really, and just overawed by Vic and Bob. And I had a conversation with Vic Reeves in his caravan about cheese.
Oh.
And it seemed to me that I was actually in some sort of weird sketch with him talking about cheese, and also, what was the other thing that he's a real expert in? It's kind of blood sausage or something like that.
Right.
You know, so he's talking about, like, your favourite kind of cheese, and I was thinking, wow, he's really like that. This is the actual stuff he talks about, and I kept on expecting him to suddenly talk about something normal, but he didn't.
It's one of my emergency questions, that.
Yeah.
What is your favourite type of cheese?
Well, I love cheese.
Yeah.
So I that was the other thing, was I couldn't really partake of the conversation. It was just like, shit, I hate cheese.
If you had to eat one of them, though, which one would you eat?
I suppose Primula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are nice. You should give them a go.
Really?
I like
which
all
the
of the
best?
Cheeses.
Well, the cheese is like the stench of death. Feet and death.
Well, the really smelly ones can be. If you don't like the smell, some are very bland.
Yeah, but it's either very much the smell of feet and death, or it's just a little bit the smell. Not too bad. Yeah, it's like he's just died.
Yeah.
It's not too bad yet. He's just taken his socks off. He's only been to the shops. It's not too bad. Yeah, that's fine. It's either that, or it's like, Jesus Christ, it's the Walking Dead.
I'm from Cheddar, so I find this anti-cheese talk very upsetting.
Sorry.
That is the best cheese in the world, Cheddar.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is this something, I mean, do you eat a lot of cheese? Because, I mean, cheese is one of the few things that isn't good for you that I don't really
I don't. I don't eat very much because it's not very good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've kind of given up eating. You eat pizza, though, right?
No, I don't, see, yeah. I mean, that's the
God,
only
we're
kind
learning
of...
stuff about
but I
straight
envy...
in with the learning the things about... Yeah. Says a lot about you, this, that you don't eat
pizza.
No,
I'm so envious of people who do eat pizza because I can see that it's clearly, like... one of the great nice. Things in the world.
There's no smell of death on it. They're just nice. It's all melty and...
Yeah, well, sometimes I've gone and tried to join in, gone to a pizza restaurant, and ended up just getting, like, some dough with a couple of anchovies on and some tomato sauce and tried to join in with all that. It's not the same.
It's weird because the sandwich is the same thing and you could have a sandwich without cheese in it, but a pizza without cheese doesn't work.
No.
Weird, isn't it? Because it is just, if you think about it, it's just a sandwich they've flattened out.
Pizza without cheese is like the Doors without Jim Morrison. Or Adam and Joe with no Joe and just...
You're both cheesy. Let's face it. No, you have done well. You've done a lot of acting. You've done some films and stuff. You've been in the jump ahead to that.
I had one year when I got cast in three films.
Like proper big, like Stardust was like a big film. Was it?
You know what? I've got a story about Stardust, but I'm not sure if I should tell it because it's. I really shouldn't.
Is it about Lord McAlpine raping you when you were a child? Because don't tell that story unless you can back it up.
Lord McAlpine.
And if I've shown you a photo and go, and then that's Lord McAlpine, they go, no, it was a different guy. You showed me the photo.
Someone who looked very much like Lord McAlpine visited the set. No,
this is a good way of making sure this story doesn't make it. Ah, fuck it, we'll put it out. You can tell if you like, and then we can decide later if you want to put it onto the internet. But well, these people will listen to it, and probably some of them are recording it.
Well,
Mike Stone is at the front. Yeah.
Condensed version was that I sort of blogged about it. I had a blog at the time, and I was, you know, I thought I was just being candid and fun about my experience on the thing and sort of, like, teased Matthew Vaughan about some of the films that he'd made on this blog. About, what's it called, the one with Madonna in it.
I'm not good on Matthew, is it?
Swept Away. Thanks very much. And only because he had been, you know, joking about it himself on the set. But then he read the blog that I did, and he got quite upset.
Oh, no.
And it was fairly clear thereafter that I would never, ever get a part in any Matthew Vaughan film ever again. And probably not any other film. And sure enough, the phone was incredibly quiet for many years after that. But luckily... I got a part in The Persuasionists, which was an amazing BBC sitcom. You guys know that, yeah. Come on. All about the advertising industry. Turn the advertising industry on its head. It's never really recovered from the lambasting it got from The Persuasionists.
Yeah.
And so everything was fine thereafter. Completely.
And, you know, The Persuasionist was good. You know how you could have improved it? What you should have done? You should have put a Shrek in it. You'd had a Shrek in it. But this is the additional thing that would have really made it work. The Shrek would be played by Tim from The Office. Not the actor. The character. Would be played by Tim from The Office as a Shrek. Just, and it'd be probably not, just wander around in the back. It'd be the same sitcom.
Yeah.
In fact, I would quite like you to remake it frame for frame. But try my, not just put this superimposer in the background.
Who would he be replacing?
No, he'd be just an extra. My belief is if you put a Shrek in anything, not the Shrek, a Shrek, into anything, it will make it a hit. I refer you to Shrek the Musical. Should be called A Shrek the Musical. That has a Shrek in it.
An example of a Shrek.
Shrek, the movie Shrek.
Yeah.
Shrek 2. They both have Shreks in them. Very successful. But if you put a Shrek in it,
yeah,
people love Shrek. And Shreks in general. Doesn't have to even look that much like the original Shrek, just as it's recognisably a Shrek. But it would also have to look... It would also have to be recognisably Tim from The Office as well.
Yeah. Well, that confuses things, though, doesn't it?
It's just, I think that's because the...
You don't want to dilute the Shrek.
It's not, it's doubling the strength, because I think if you put Tim from The Office in The Persuasionist, that would have made it a lot better.
Well, yeah. If you put the entire cast of The Office in The Persuasionist and then rewritten it using the words from The Office... It probably would have improved it, to be honest. But, I mean, hard to do, though, because it was a very good show, and we did exactly what we set out to do, which was to fuck with people's minds. Yeah?
But it's all very arbitrary, I think, isn't it? These things get... You get judged after one episode, and then that's kind of...
You know what? It was one of those things that when we were making it... None of us really knew. Like, people always ask, did you know when you were making it what you were making? And I have to say, no. None of us really knew the impact it was going to have. And I guess looking back on it, it felt special. Sure, it felt special, but none of us really knew what an impact it was going to have on each one of our careers. We couldn't have known. You know, it's only in retrospect that you know these things.
But people are still talking about it, even if it's mainly you.
I don't get too many... Yeah, it's mainly me who talks about it. It's mainly me.
But it doesn't matter, does it? Because then you've gone on to... And then that is... In a way, it's like a Spinal Tap moment. You should envy yourself. Because then you've gone on to kind of do your own stuff with the bug and...
Yeah, I mean, you know... To be serious, though, you know, you have moments where you just sort of try everything, really, don't you? I mean, you can, it'd be a bit pointless to be, you know, I haven't got a master plan. I haven't got one thing that I'm so amazing at that I've got to stick to that and hone that and only do that. And anything away from the plan is going to fuck up the impact of that amazing thing that I do. You know, I'm just trying out lots of things and trying to see which one of them works and which one of them doesn't.
But you've done it, because I was watching loads of stuff today, actually, you know, and because that's the kind of guy I am, I prepare.
Sure.
And, you know, there's an amazing variety of stuff, like, over the whole 20 years you've been working, 20-odd years, I suppose.
Nearly
20 years. And, you know, you have jumped around from films and then just music videos. I saw, I don't know how you pronounce the name of the band, Wanna Dies or Wanna Dies?
Oh, yeah, the Wanna Dies, yeah.
Wanna Dies.
They would like to die.
They Wanna Die.
Yeah.
Do you get a chance to check out? I've never seen this before, but it's on your website, isn't it? It's just one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Oh, you did? Do you like that one? They were with me on stilts.
Yeah, you're on stilts with big furry boots,
right.
So you look like you're gigantic.
And I have just a waistcoat on, so my hairy belly is exposed.
And one piece of hair sort of sticking up in the air, so you're like some kind of... French dancer or something.
That's
expressionist
right.
dancer. But you would think, well, if you got given that as a script, to go a small man on stilts that look like furry shoes just dances around for 4 minutes.
That was Garth Jennings who directed that, and so he suggested that we do something, because I kept on saying, like, you know, because I know lots of directors and I'm always trying to get in there work somehow. one particular director has been particularly resistant to my efforts. Joe fucking Cornish.
Yeah, it's annoying.
I mean, you know, obviously he gave me the part of a voiceover of a nature documentary in the back of the scene of his debut feature. But Garth has... I mean, when Garth got the job of... he directed... His debut film was the adaptation of Hitchhikers.
Mm-hmm. Took my advice. Put Tim from The Office in it, didn't
he? There you go.
And he should have been a Shrek as well, then it would have been okay.
And maybe he should have had some more Shreks.
And more Shreks. He made the mistake of putting "That's my." I didn't enjoy this film. I don't want to upset you if he's your friend.
No, listen. He's well aware of the critical reception. Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do, right? Because it's the much loved idea. And my least favorite thing in that, which should work by my own logic, was when he put a Marvin from the original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy
in the queue.
He put in the queue, but then he had Tim from The Office do his Tim from The Office thing, where he sort of did a double take at the robot.
Yes.
And I just thought that it blows everything. It might have been a funny little joke to have in the background, but and then all the rest of the film
where
was also
where were
shit.
You? Where the hell were you?
I should have been in there going, make it a Shrek, and then Tim from The Office looks at the Shrek. But might have even predated Shrek. Man, that would have really blown people's minds.
I mean, I've told this story before on the radio, but I auditioned for the part that Tim from The Office got. Yeah, and that was one of my horrific audition stories that basically ended with me. I'll sort of do a short version.
Do a long version, honestly.
Well, basically,
I
I'd been bothering Garth so much about it, you know, and teasing him and saying, "Hey, man, you know, you're doing this big Hollywood film, and this is exciting. Please, can I have a part?" You know, please can I have a part? please, can I have a part? And so he would go, yeah. And then I'd go, hey, seriously, man, can I have a part? And then, you know, thinking that maybe voice of a Vogon, something like that.
Yeah.
And that would have been great. And then he says, listen, come in and audition for, Arthur Dent. And so I said, all right. So I thought I'll throw myself into this and went to the audition. And Susie Figgis was the casting director.
Oh,
she's quite a well-known casting director, powerful lady. And so she's an imposing presence anyway. And so she was there, and I was very nervous, and there was Garth. He's very upbeat and smiley, Garth. And so I'd learnt all my, my scene that I was going to do. But then I thought, to make it even better, what I'll do is I'll wear a bathrobe, like Arthur Dent does, right? And so just before the audition started, I sort of went, just before we get going, I'll just... have something in my bag here. But I imagine this is the kind of thing that Benedict Cumberbatch would say.
Did you think they might go, well, he's got his own bathroom, that will save us for £4.50?
Exactly. I was thinking that they would think that, and not only that, but look at the level of commitment on this guy. He's come totally armed and prepared. He's taking this thing seriously. I've never seen anything like this before. Usually stars are so jaded they expect everything done for them. This is charming to bring along a bathrobe. So I produce the bathrobe, and I, as I'm producing it from my bag, I can see this is a fucking awful idea. And I can see the colour draining from Garth's face. And although he insists now that was not the case, but I could certainly see Susie Figgis getting rather appalled. And so I put the bathrobe on, do a very lacklustre reading for Arthur Dent, and then I sort of, I'm kind of embarrassed, and I'm putting the bathrobe away, and I'm like, probably shouldn't have used the bathroom, I suppose. trying to make light of it with a kind of office-style voice. And she said, well, put it this way, if you'd done that in Hollywood, you'd never work again.
especially if you weren't auditioning for the part of Arthur Dent. If you kind of went in...
Yeah,
Darth Vader or something. Just a minute.
Yeah.
In a way, Arthur Dent was the perfect character to try that for. But if you,
would think, yeah.
If you went in,
Ridley. Before I've got this thing that I like to do before an audition. I hope you don't mind if I just pop on my bathrobe.
I think that's awful. I think that's a nice thing to do. When I did my last TV thing, where you can choose your friends, which is a drama about basically around my family, my own family. It'd be amazing to do a drama of my family, the Robert Lindsay thing, just and actually do a serious drama of that, where just terrible things happen to them.
But one of the lads who came on audition, kind of, it was meant to be a breakfast scene he was reading. He kind of got out of his bag, he got like a box of cornflakes and a bowl, and we thought it was rather nice, and he got the part.
Yeah.
So there you go. So you'd have worked with me again if you'd done that. I'd have said, well, think of the money, the savings. And the costumer said, well, we'll need more than one. We'll need like some backup copies of that dressing gown. It might be cheaper to just right. buy some bulk ones rather than use the same one again and again.
The hero dressing gown.
Yeah.
It's a bit of film.
But gosh, I mean, I don't like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy so much, his film, but he's done some amazing. I mean, though, that video was incredible. Son of Rambo, that was one of his.
Yeah,
that
well, that's much more like what he would actually make if it was up to him. You know,
it's
like,
an amazing film.
To get such a big adaptation as your debut feature is kind of a poison chalice, yeah. really. And he was very much being watched over by Disney. It's a big studio, and they were, you know, it's a situation where you're sort of a gun for hire. And really, it's you know you're not an auteur in those situations. You're just a guy that's directing what the studio wants. So yeah. it's difficult, but yeah, it hasn't stopped him, and he's working on a new film right now, actually, which I probably shouldn't talk about. But it's going to be good. I think it's exciting.
Good. I think we need an emergency question quickly because it's gone a bit quiet. Luckily, I've got some emergency questions for when this happens, things that I can just ask you.
I said something sincere with no amusing punchline. And then there was an agonising 2 second gap.
There was. And as a very professional interviewer,
as a comedian,
I spotted that. And I thought, right, I'll rest. I won't say anything. I'll just use my interviewing skills. What I've done is when I interviewed Jonathan Ross, loads of those happened, and I just went, think of anything to say. And then so why did I wrote in the back, do you like this, but this is Slytherin, because I don't like Harry Potter. So when I went to Harry Potter World with my wife, I bought £18.50, and I'm stuffing it to in J.K. Rowling's face, aren't I like Slytherin because they hate Harry Potter. Enjoy your £18.50.
Although, the only problem is that you have to explain that every single time you produce the notebook so that people understand it's
pretty
ironic.
Cool. I'm pretty cool. I think it's actually worse to have it in an ironic way. It's more embarrassing that I've bought it in an ironic way than it would be just to go, I really like Slytherin, I enjoy
it. The fact is, it is kind of a beautiful notebook.
It's really nice. Look, feel the weight of it in there. Look at that. Nice, isn't it? I've got so many notebooks. I've got more notebooks than I need.
It's real metal as
it's
well.
Like, better be real fucking gold. white gold. Anyway, look, we'll ask. Oh, no, it's the wrong way around. They're in the back. So they're always there ready to go. If you had to have sex with an animal, if you had to...
From the back door question.
If you had to, yeah. Right? Oh, your kids were going to be... No. in prison somewhere, with nice jails, who looked after them.
Are you living in prison?
With nice that isn't gents. Usually part of the
with
question.
With Lord McAlpine.
They'd be very safe.
Nice
They'd be very
guys.
Safe with yeah. the. He runs a B&B and he's very trustworthy. if you had to,
yeah.
What animal would you? You can choose any animal, any particular animal or species of animal, but you have to have sex with one of them, and then everything will be fine.
All right. Human being is an animal, though, right?
Yeah, it does. That doesn't count. That's you think you found the clever.
All right.
If that the clever way round.
What about some humans that are nearly? Like,
I'd allow
they're so close
Neanderthal.
To animals.
You could have a Neanderthal man.
Yeah.
Or woman. No, I want the man. I want the Neanderthal man.
I will answer your question, but who is, out of interest, do you think the most Neanderthal woman, without being, like, revolting and sexy? I would like to preface this question by saying that I find that kind of woman very attractive.
Well, but the Neanderthal people are thought to be possibly more intelligent than Homo sapiens in any case.
Mm-hmm.
And the traditional ideas of them are changing all the time. We possibly all have some Neanderthal DNA in us, although that changes depending
on... And physiologically, what constitutes a Neanderthal visage?
Well, I think there may be more... Their brows may be slightly
pronounced
more...
Pronounced brow.
Pronounced kind of...
Hairy, dark...
So maybe I kind of imagine them as being gingers.
Yeah.
That's just me imagining, I don't know. I'm not saying that's where all gingers came from, and anyone who is ginger definitely is related to Neanderthal.
Dexter, He's like a ginger Neanderthal man. Have you ever watched that show?
Yes, he is.
Or Damian Lewis. He has some fairly Neanderthal moments in Homeland. But yeah,
I like the Neanderthals. I mean, I feel partly responsible for their demise.
I'm like a monkey man myself. Yeah. I mean, we're both a little bit monkey-like.
We have similarities. But it was, you know, the Neanderthals were in Europe before the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think the BNP are kind of slightly Neanderthal-ish. I think it's like that attitude. We were here first, therefore we're the best.
Yeah.
They were here and then we came along, the Homo sapiens.
Mm.
It's a medical term. And we kind of either killed them, maybe had sex with some of them, thought a bit weird, but you know, I'm doing a show about men and what they'll have sex with, and it's everything. So like a Neanderthal would be high.
Why were they thinking Because you see, most of the things they thought I would probably be thinking hairy. I like a hairy woman. Love a hairy woman, you know.
I do know, yeah.
And
it's very much. I was talking to Rob Delaney, very similar to you.
I don't mind a moustache, a little downy moustache.
Well, people are hairy, weird mammals.
Sure. And when people vilified Julia Roberts for not shaving at the Oscars, I was in sexy heaven. I was getting aroused every time there was a story about it. I was thinking, oh my goodness, the pretty woman just got prettier.
It's nice to have, because the hair traps a little bit of scent.
Yeah,
that's not always a bad thing.
Maybe even a little bit of food. So
in an armpit,
double whammy. You can just have a little nibble.
But I see you're trying to evade the question.
I'm not. Sorry. No, I'll get back to the question.
It's an important emergency question.
The important question about which animal I would actually have sexual intercourse with if I had to avoid
the humane imprisonment of your children. The humane and safe imprisonment.
Living with
children.
A Tory MP. God.
It's quite hard, isn't it?
Well, maybe a horse.
Yeah.
You know, there's a film called The Beast. Have you ever seen The Beast?
No.
Oh, that's a good film. What's the name, film nerds out there in the audience?
They'll know.
What's the name of the director?
Ooh.
Of The Beast? La Bête?
They don't know.
Guys.
This is incredible. They're usually like Wikipedia.
It is, I'm sorry that I can't remember. It's maybe a Polish director. Anyway, it's a good film. And Jarvis Cocker likes this film as well. I found out that he enjoys it. It's the kind of film that they used to show at the Scala a lot back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I think the ICA used to show it. And anyway, it has some very extended scenes of horses mounting each other. Mm. And there's one very moving moment where a horse kind of dismounts. And that, you know, it's very literally animal, obviously, when they're making sweet, sweet horse love. The horse on top sort of bites the mane of the other one, and it really is great.
So when you're having sex with this horse, are you the postman or are you the letterbox in this? Are you enjoying the idea of having a horse biting your hair? Or are you thinking, I'd like to fuck a horse and bite its mane? It would have to be quite a Shetland pony or something.
I'm not thinking it like that, because that's not romantic. I would be giving the gift rather than receiving the gift.
Either way would count.
I mean,
don't think anyone has yet taken.
Because in history, there's lots of who was the queen?
Catherine the Great. Right. Well, apocryphally, I think, but she was meant to have died.
Right.
Meant to have died by a horse
having
falling.
A horse lowered onto her.
Well, all lowered to her, and then I think the rope broke. The harness broke, yeah.
The nightmare scenario.
None of it's true, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to discredit the idea of having a female
zone. It's a sort of a sexist story as well, the idea that a lady just, all she's imagining is a bigger and bigger willy.
Yeah.
And, eventually she just has to get a horse lowered down onto her. Whereas actually, it's more truthful to think that a man like you would be going around thinking about just shagging anything that moved. There's probably more men that have had sex with horses than there are women who have had sex with a horse.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
And now it looks as if I'm one of them.
I've unlocked something, and that's what's good about the emergency questions, is you learn something. You don't. Everyone gets slightly off centre by them. I'm going to ask you this one before I forget.
Seek out La
Bette. This is the most important question.
Google it.
If you you can Google, but you might want you're going to have to think hard about this.
Yeah.
If you had that, you've got to choose between a hand made of ham. One of your hands will be made of ham.
Yeah, I heard this question before.
No, you haven't heard the whole thing, though.
Have I not?
You could eat a bit of the ham. You could eat it, but it doesn't grow. It'll grow back, but not immediately. So it's not like a limitless source of food.
Right.
But it's. He's on the internet as he's listening to this.
Valerian Borachek, I think you pronounce his name. 1975, La Bette. I recommend it.
If you want to see some horses fucking.
Wow. That's the tip of the iceberg. Sorry, yes.
Catherine the Great had one of those. A handmade of ham. Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream of whatever factor you require, but only like enough maybe for your family's needs for a week. It would not be enough to go into a commercial selling of armpit sun cream.
Yeah,
well, I mean, if it's
our family, it would require a lot of sun cream if it was a sunny situation.
Yeah.
Because my wife insists on slavering every exposed part of the children.
Yeah,
in sun cream.
That is correct.
That is correct, isn't it? It wasn't the case in our day, though.
No, it wasn't at all. Just got.
I mean, it was a badge of pride to come back and be able to remove an entire layer of skin from your arm or your face. You know what I mean? Like a mask to strip it off. Look at this. I was in Corfu. Peel your entire face off and then eat it. Chew it up like Hannibal Lecter.
Did you ever get rid? Because I once was on holiday with my family when I was growing up, actually, and we went to Devon, and I was playing my nephew at backgammon on the beach, and it was really misty, right? There was just thick mist, couldn't see anything. We got separated from everyone else, we couldn't find us. So I just played my nephew at backgammon and was trying to just get money off him for money because he was about 14 and he didn't play backgammon. So I thought I'd steal some money off him. And we just let, you know, I was sort of sitting in the same position, but obviously the sun was coming, was beating hot through this mist. And I was there for 3 or 4 hours. And then my whole leg kind of got sunburned, but then it turned like into plastic.
Yeah.
Like completely.
Oh.
It was just amazing, but painful as hell.
Yeah.
Really terrible, but really good fun.
Wicked, exactly.
Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Love it, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Brilliant. So anyway,
to
ask you a question, though.
So again, we got an interesting, I caught him off balance, even though I was expecting it. So it's a ham hand.
Yeah.
If you want to know anything, if you think you may have made up your mind. I think
smoked ham, glazed ham, can you pick the kind of ham?
I think you'd be allowed to pick, but then you wouldn't be allowed to change. It would stay the same kind of ham perpetually from there on in.
Okay. I'd like a ham.
Would you?
Yeah. Yeah, I like ham.
Yeah.
And I'm not fussed. I've got what my dad and his generation used to unattractively call a touch of the tar brush. Which means that my mum's South American.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So I'm sort of dark-skinned anyway.
Yeah, so you don't need...
Don't really need it. I've got natural tar brush protection. Touch of the tar.
So you can be laughing with the ham.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, to me, protecting myself from the sun is less important than supplying my face with ham.
Yeah. You'd be thinking as you're eating, when I was at school, all those kids who laughed at me for having a Chilean mum or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Now look at them. Now I've got this ham hand.
In your face. What are you snacking on? Cuticles? You fucking loser.
I've got a new emergency question that comes out of last week. So we'll get back onto talking about your career soon.
No.
This comes out of last week. When you eat asparagus, does your wee then smell of asparagus?
Obviously,
it doesn't for everyone. Dave Gorman knows a lot about this. Most people it does.
Yeah.
A tiny percent of people it doesn't. A tiny percent of people it does, but they don't have the olfactory needs to be able to smell the wee. So they think that their wee doesn't smell, but it's just because their nose doesn't smell that smell.
Hmm.
But you wee and it smells of...
Instantly.
Yeah. Does
what's the other one? Cocoa puffs?
Yeah,
or?
Sugar puffs. When your wife eats asparagus, does her wee smell of asparagus afterwards? And if you didn't know, would she let you smell her wee to find out? Or would she say you weren't allowed to? This comes out of last week's show.
That's a good question.
Thank you.
That is the question I've been waiting for all my life. That's the kind of question that Joe wouldn't have entertained so much. He always resented my gravitation to the lavatory conversationally. Oh, do we always have to end up talking about the toilet? He would say.
Yeah.
And to which the answer was yes. Yes, we do. My theory is that it's a great leveller.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, I don't know. I hope she would let me smell it, but I never have had the opportunity. I was hearing you earlier on, before the show started, talking to the audience about your Dutch oven, a revolting Dutch oven that you had created. And how long have you been married?
7 months.
Is it really only seven
months? Yeah, I've been together for 5 years, though.
Sweet baby Jesus. Yeah. That is the dawn of your beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
And so at that difficult early stage, are you not ashamed or worried about what your wife or your beautiful wife will think if you create a revolting
stench of death? Well, I am. I'm ashamed of it, but sometimes I can't help it.
Yeah.
Like if I'm asleep, for example, then I can't...
But is it not an option just to... Because sometimes what I do, because still I always feel as if, you know, I'm a romantic guy, because if I know I've got a revolting fart building up, then I'll go out to the lavvy to do it. Yeah,
but what if you're asleep? You don't wake up. When I did one in my sleep that woke us both up.
Yeah, I did that.
Not from the sound, from the smell. And then once we woke up, it was kind of really contained. It was only the very peripheral little tiny whisper had come out.
Yeah.
That was enough to wake us up. Then when we shifted in disgust, that unleashed.
That's
and
right,
then it doesn't shift. That's the it just.
Yeah.
Then it's like hours later. It's still
it hangs there like marsh gas.
It does.
And
I like to go. I will usually go and sleep in another room. But on this occasion, both the other beds had people in them, and that would. I mean, I think my wife would have been annoyed if I had, just subjected one of her friends to that smell more than anything.
Because sometimes what happens is, you know, I'll be lying in the bed, and you've got the duvet in a certain position, and you think, well, if I let it escape incrementally over a period of time, then that it'll sort of dissipate and it won't be a problem. And then you realise that that's not the case, and actually a toxic cloud has built up beneath the duvet. And then you think, Jesus, I can't move now, because if there's any movement from either party, then there will be a billowing, wafting effect that will take place. The bellows. And then the jig will be up. So, yeah, it's very difficult. And so sometimes what I try and do is with the tip of my toe, I try and open up an exit to sort of channel the gas out. And then I use my leg as a kind of bellows, wafting up and down with the duvet to try and allow it to exit safely away from my wife. Sometimes it works.
Yeah, sometimes
it not so much.
And sometimes you think, well, they're not in the... You know, she's in the bathroom, got 5 minutes.
And it's not
minutes.
The end of the world. I mean, you know, obviously, she sort of goes, oh, come on, or something like that. You know, I'm sort of chastised, or, that's revolting. But you sort of think, it's just one chip away from the romantic... architecture.
They don't like it. I mean, if you could find a woman who did like it, that might be the answer. But it's too late for us both now. We've settled down with someone who doesn't like
it. A hairy woman who liked it.
Imagine that.
Imagine.
With the sort of mane. and horse-like teeth.
Nahey.
And I'll just ask you, I might come back to the emergency questions, but in case I don't, have you ever seen a ghost?
No, I don't believe in ghosts.
Has...
Everyone I know and love believes in ghosts passionately.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, my closest, nearest and dearest, all of them, all my friends seem to believe in ghosts.
Any of your siblings ever seen a ghost?
No, I don't think so. I'd love to see a ghost. Because, you know, if you saw a ghost, fucking hell, you are sorted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a game changer. Because life after death, God exists... Everything is...
It doesn't mean God exists if there are ghosts.
Surely.
It means the opposite. It means that when you're dead, you sort of float around in the world. There's no God.
Oh, really? Well, to me, it would mean that if that was possible, then anything else was possible. And sure, why not God, you know?
Well, anything's possible.
It's not, though, is it?
There might be ghosts. Some people have seen them.
I would love to. Have you?
No.
No.
I don't think they exist.
I mean, that is a drag, though, isn't it? But maybe it's because I'm close. You see, this is what my friends tell me. It's like, well, they're not going to show themselves to you because of your closed mind. I'm like, fuck off. Come on. But
if I was a ghost, I would go after the closed-minded people.
Well, exactly.
I'd go right for them. I'd be shitting them up all over, going, "Think you're so clever."
I mean, I can think of nothing that I'd like more than to see a ghost. I live out in the countryside, and at one point I was doing a, and we're right out in the sticks here, so there's just fields around us. And when it's dark and it's a moonless night, it is pitch black out there, and all there are cows in the field. And I used to have to walk across the fields at the end of the night to get home sometimes if I'd been working over at my studio or whatever. And it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying, but mainly because I was frightened of being trampled by cows, not so much being attacked by ghosts.
What if it was a ghost cow, though? You wouldn't know, would you?
That would be the ultimate.
Because you just walk through, and then you walk through the cow.
Yeah, and shag it.
You could do. No mane, though, is it? I mean, you could stick a mane on it.
But still, some of those cows, wow.
And just one more peripheral question off of this. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, you see, no. You should be asking Joe this. He's an expert.
Has he seen, has he seen one?
I don't know if he's seen one, but he'd love to. He's obsessed by Sasquatch. Is Sasquatch the same as Bigfoot? Or
I think it is. So I wouldn't have accepted... If you'd said, I've seen a Yeti, I would not have accepted.
Oh, okay. Yeti
is
different.
I'd have said, I'm not interested. If you'd started the conversation, I'd say, shut up.
Yeti.
I don't want to know about
Yeti. Where's the Yeti from?
Yeti's from the Himalayas and stuff.
Ah,
not interested in that.
Snow guy.
If you could be going, I've got an amazing story about a Yeti that I saw and spent some time with, I'd go, not interested.
Do you remember the Sasquatch?
I'm interested in the Sasquatch
episode
Bigfoot.
Sorry. I was just interjecting some bollocks into your bollocks. Do you remember the. That's a good medical procedure. What we are doing here is interjecting bollocks into this man's bollocks. Do you remember the $6 Million Man with Lee Majors?
Yes, of course.
Of course. Do you remember the Sasquatch episode? Two-parter.
Don't remember it.
Yeah, man. There was a big fucking Sasquatch. And it was obviously a big... not Richard Kiel, I don't think, right. Who was the big go-to guy for giantific roles.
Yes.
The humanoid he was in. Great film. But it was, he was jumping around, and at first he was a bit like Jaws in the Bond film, starts out being a baddie, but actually in Moonraker they end up sort of bonding.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a terrible tangent. This is why you should edit your podcast.
No. This is why you never edit the podcast.
Lose the whole $6 Million Man.
No, this is the best bit. One person out there loves this. They're not in the room, let's face it, but somewhere in the world. And that's what I'm aiming for, one person enjoying something more than they've
enjoyed. They're probably on life support. But almost certainly it's on YouTube. And I remember it made a big impression on me. And it gets all weird and... strange, so, you know, like how sometimes your favourite Saturday evening shows would get very, very high concept.
Yeah.
And there'd be a bit of magic realism in there or something, and things would go, like suddenly Mork would turn up on Happy Days or whatever. And your world would be turned upside down. Ha ha. Sorry.
Right, let's get back to the Adam Buxton questions that no one else gets.
What, that no one else understands?
Yeah. Tell me about Rolf Harris at the Glastonbury Festival. I would like to hear more about this story that I've only just learned about.
Have I not told you about that?
Don't think so, no.
Surely I've just told that story a million times. Maybe I've been circumspect about it in the past and now I'm not fussed.
But I'm just now more interested in TV personalities from the 70s and 80s. I think it puts a new gloss on it, on everything you hear.
Because of Lee Majors.
Yeah.
I thought you railed against that kind of retrospective.
All right, let's not do it. Fuck it.
I can tell you about him, though.
Right.
I for what it's worth, always thought he was a bit of a creepy fucker.
Right.
Obviously, one of the world's great artists. No question. And a wonderful musician. But in person, kind of a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Weird, creepy man.
Right.
Certainly not casting any aspersions whatsoever in the current climate. Happily married and a wonderful charitable figure who no one could possibly think ill of. Oh, but all I know is that he unnecessarily got very, very upset with Joe for saying that he seemed mildly autistic. Only mildly. Joe didn't say it to his face. We'd interviewed him on this coverage of Glastonbury that we were doing, I think in 2000 or something like that, and he was one of those people that wandered through the BBC compound and some assistant producer sort of dragged him in front of us and said, "Interview Rolf Harris." And so we were like, oh, okay, here we go. And so we asked him to draw something, you know, which he probably wasn't excited about. And he certainly seemed very bored by both of us, fair enough. And then right the way through, he was doing his noises and stuff while he was drawing and all this kind of stuff and being sort of weird and a bit weird and chippy with us. You know what I mean? Like, you know, who are you two stupid fuckers? Fair enough, I suppose you could say. But, you know, we didn't warm to him. And so when he went off, the next link we did, Joe sort of said, yeah, Rolf Harris, there you go. He seems sort of mildly autistic, doesn't he? But, unfortunately, that was going out live and Rolf happened to be he happened to be in front of a monitor elsewhere on the compound.
Yeah, that's the problem with TV. It does go out into the world.
It's true,
can't just
it?
Stay stuff on it. It's not like this podcast. You can say what you like on here. Yeah. No one will hear.
People hear it and see it. And so he saw that comment being made, got very upset because, you know, autism is a serious thing, and he is a prominent patron of an autism charity. And he wrote to the BBC, and he wrote to, I think, Stuart Murphy, who was then head of BBC Choice, as it was then, BBC Three as it is now, and said, I want a proper apology for that comment, otherwise I'm not going to do any more programmes for the BBC. And so Joe is not going to thank me telling this story. Joe had to write him a letter and you know, like, properly apologise. But then when I've told this story in the past, Joe sort of gets quite antsy and says, listen, you said that some band took a load of cocaine live on air, so we got in trouble for that as well. And I'm sure that's possibly true. We were both loose-tongued and stupid.
Yes, well, I'm still loose-tongued and stupid. We had to, me and Stu, did a sketch in which I portrayed Big Daddy, another figure from the 70s and 80s, who I understand was a bouncer at Jimmy Savile's clubs in the north.
Wow.
There's a whole kind of underworld thing of like something
basically
criminally dodgy going on with the nightclubs. I mean, yeah. You know, with the money behind them that I was reading about today. But we did a sketch where I dressed. I don't even quite remember. I think it was on This Morning, Rich Not Judy, where I was dressed as Big Daddy. And it was quite a celebratory thing, and I was with, you know, in this stupid little leotard with Big Daddy on it, running around. And doing the thing of going bouncing off the ropes, but then the third time getting the person I was going to get. I don't think it was particularly bad, but Big Daddy's widow, Mrs. Crabtree, got wind of what we'd done, and we had to write a letter apologising to her and saying how we were big fans of Big Daddy, which we were. And Stu said he remembered his gran went to one of the wrestling matches, and Big Daddy had giant haystacks down on the tarpaulin, and his gran was hitting giant haystacks with a handbag. That didn't happen. He just made that up. That was like on World of Sport every week.
And that was
like some old woman getting up and hitting. But we had to apologise.
And he was proffering that by way of apology. Yeah.
He was just trying to say what big fans we were. So he sort of sarcastically, I'm kind of assuming she's dead now, so she won't be now upset. Now I've revealed that we sort of gave a slightly sarcastic apology, but it was kind of, you know, but then we went a bit over the top. It was a bit over the top,
man, run. It was strange, you know, obviously everyone's appreciated the fact that the 70s were a very strange time for light entertainment, yeah, and the kind of people that we were entertained by. I mean, I remember my dad coming into the room when we would watch Jim Will Fix It and just saying, "Look at that loathsome creep." And we'd be like, "Dad, that's Jimmel, fuck's sake. I just wrote to the guy to ask if I could take a bath in a load of Smarties, so will you just ease off?"
Jim asked if I could fuck a horse.
But it turns out that my dad realised.
So I was going to talk about your dad, because you work with, you use your dad in a lot of your stuff, and it's a great comic effect.
Sometimes I saw my sister actually just before coming here, and we were talking about our plans for Christmas, and she was saying that she wasn't sure she could face the traditional barrage of negativity from my dad that we're always exposed to every time we get together as a family. And he is, I don't know why exactly, because I mean, there's a lot of lyrical and romantic things about my dad in a way, but he is fucking negative about it. And the whole point of getting him involved with the Adam and Joe show when we used to do it was to try and convert him and to help him understand or appreciate some of the things that we really loved, because he was that much older. I mean, he's 87 now, I think. Right. So he was that much older than a lot of my friends' dads.
Yeah.
And there was really no question of him being into any of the things that we were into. So we were trying to kind of convert him, and actually, we really failed. He was pretty down on a lot of the stuff that we were excited about, to the extent that I think a couple of times Channel 4 said, "Listen, he's got nothing good to say about anyone. Can you possibly go back and ask him just to think of one positive thing to say about something? Otherwise it's going to be very depressing." So I think we went back and asked him to be more positive about Supergrass. And there was a video with Gaz from Supergrass on a pogo stick. I think it was "All the Time," whatever that song was. He said, "Well, I suppose it's when they're on the pogo sticks, it reminds me a little bit of Tigger." "Because they're bouncy, 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 fun, 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 fun." And that was it at gunpoint. That was all we could. That was the most positive thing we could get out of him, was that Gaz reminded him of Tigger.
But it's a big set. I mean, I was thinking, because my dad is like unintentionally hilarious, as most dads are, I think. Yeah. My dad is a buffoon, and you know, I'm happy to kind of base characters on him, and I'm happy. And like at my wedding, as people will know, there was mints and lip balm on the tables. My dad ate the lip balm, thinking it was cheese. Right, so he's very funny. When my parents' golden wedding, I do a routine that comes out of my parents' golden wedding when my grandma's gets covered in glitter, which you can see on What's Love Anyway. But at that same thing, my dad got up to do a speech about being married to my mum for 50 years, in which he didn't really mention my mum very much at all. And then he got sort of sidetracked very early on. And he said, when David was born, that's my oldest brother, he says, of course, we had a private room because I'd been teaching the doctor, I'd been teaching his son mathematics as a private, and he gave me this private room. Of course, the son then went on to become a suspect in the Yorkshire Ripper case. My dad talked, and then he went on about the story for quite a long, it turned out it was just, when he got older, he was suspected of being, it turned out he wasn't the Yorkshire Ripper, but he was questioned. Yeah. But my dad spent about 5 minutes telling this story, didn't really say anything about my mum, he talked more about the Yorkshire Ripper in his 50th athletic. I would say that's the thing you're not going to expect. So he's very good comedic value, but I'd be worried about, you know, putting him on air in case stuff like that happens. I mean, you think, you know, my dad thinks, he says to me, he's been saying to me years, you know, I should manage you. You know, he should manage me because he doesn't think my management's doing a good, it would be better if a 76-year-old ex-headmaster who knows nothing about show business was my manager, then we would do better. Because I did a gig and not that many people came. He said, how much do you get paid for doing this? I said, well, they got quite a good deal. They got me like £1,000 for doing the gig. And he said, oh dear, that's not on though, is it? Because the theatre will have lost money as a result of you doing this. You should give them some of that money back. And I said, I don't really want you being my manager. That's not that what I want from my manager. Isn't someone with a sense of decency. Okay, that's not fair. So he's, you know, he's, my dad is similarly amusing as yours is, I think, as well.
Does your
I'd be worried about putting him out there.
Yeah. Does your dad like what you do though?
Well, I think he sort of does. I mean, he thinks he's funnier than I am, and he's only funny by accident, whereas I am. So I'm very funny on purpose, but you know, he is this kind of massive. I mean, I think like most of our families, right? I think most people's families are eccentric to them, you know.
Sure.
Because we get to know them better than anyone else. I kind of admire you for taking that chance and putting
it
him
out. It was difficult
there.
Because, you know, well, it was Louis Theroux that we went to school with who suggested that we should do it in the first place.
Right.
Because it was our Christmas Eve routine that we would gather at my house in Clapham, and Joe and Louis would come over and we'd all get a bit pissed on this kind of sparkling wine that my dad would produce. Lindauer, it's called. And then my dad loved Louis because, you know, he was sort of from a kind of literary family and sort of respectable. You know, Louis was doing well and he was always bound for greatness, and me and Joe were just twats. So he would sort of ignore us and just monologue at Louis, you know. And me and Joe would sit behind my dad making faces at Louis. Making kind of blowjob faces and stuff. And then, but Louis would always chuckle and say, oh man, you should put your dad on your show. That's the thing to do. So we tried it, but then I thought, I found it painful, you know, because I don't have like a very close, touchy-feely relationship with my dad, really.
Yeah.
It's not what my family's like. And so if you're in a kind of professional situation, things get complicated anyway, no matter who you're working with. And if it's your dad, then it's even more difficult. When we were in Ibiza, I remember we went to one trick that my dad used to do. Like during the day, we'd hang out and go to the beach and stuff. And Joe busted my dad taking photographs of topless women. Totally unashamedly. You'd sort of sit there and occasionally just go, oh my goodness. Get out a big fucking SLR and point it. There you go. Wonderful, wonderful. Look, and his creepy catchphrase was, she's got nice eyes. I say, Dad, she's miles away. What are you talking about?
Got lovely, lovely eyes.
And so Joe would be saying, Mr. Buxton, that is really not appropriate. Can you not do that? And then that would put me in a weird position because I'd be like, Joe, man, it's my dad. Don't, like, he's not total sex, but he is a sex pervert. But don't be, please, can we? And then we'd end up filming. We went and filmed in a club called Space in is it Spaced? No, that's the show. Space is the club in Ibiza. And, you know, it was a long night, and we hadn't really got that much stuff because my dad was so appalled by the whole scene that he was just grumpy about it. And again, it was this sort of tirade of negativity that we had to kind of minimize. And Joe said, go, and there was a guy sort of dancing semi-naked with a tiny little thong on, a very kind of muscly guy, on all greased on a podium kind of thing, grooving around. And Joe got him to come over and, like, start grooving around with my dad and wrapping himself around my dad, and my dad fucking freaked out. Get off me! All of you! No, no, no! Absolutely not. No. That's beyond a joke. That is not amusing in any way. And then... we ended up in the car park outside Space with me saying to my dad, listen, Dad, you are not being professional. You are being totally unprofessional. And he flipped out. Don't you dare call me unprofessional. You know, because suddenly I was his son again rather than his employer. And it was very fraught, the whole thing.
That's why I wouldn't like to have my dad in my stuff.
Having said that, more often than not, he was a total trooper, and he inhaled when it was asked of him. So, yeah.
And talking of breasts, and I think that video, I'm very much enjoying the music videos that you put out, which I think some of them come from your TV, your Sky show.
Oh, from Buck, yeah.
But the one about the my amazing
amazing music video,
which
song.
Your dad's in, right? Is that your dad in?
Yeah, he pops up in that, and he pops up as well in the video we did for Summertime Blues by Guitar Wolf, which Garth directed.
Yes,
with me on a beach with dodging explosions.
Yes, that's awesome as well. That is an awesome thing. But they're very. I think you kind of want to watch these. That they get stuck in your head, the songs always, and you want to watch them loads and loads of times. So they're amazing. But what I wanted to ask you about that was, this is a spoiler. Don't listen to this. At the end of the video, the lady woman in the video takes her top off.
Sif Augusts.
Yes, and is it the same woman who writes you at the Six Music?
That's right, the Ice Queen. Yeah, okay. The Ice Maiden.
She finally takes her clothes off at the end and reveals that she, instead of breasts, she has penises.
Titcocks.
Yes. But in real life, did you get to see her actual tits?
No, I was very keen that she shouldn't feel more uncomfortable than she needed to. So we put, also for tracking purposes, we put big bits of coloured tape.
We put some cocks on her. Yeah. Wouldn't I feel uncomfortable? So you taped her up.
No, I mean, you know, I don't. I it's my nightmare to. I mean, I guess I was taking the piss a little bit in that moment of videos that did seem to rely on getting women to take their tops off. It just seems like a lazy fallback position, really, in this day and age, and I can't believe that so many directors still do it. But, you know, then if you take the piss out of that, you are presented with the reality of doing exactly the same thing, asking a lady to take her top off.
Yes.
So, I sort of agonized about it and said, listen, you know, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable, and let's put these... Are you okay with these big bits of tape, and is there any way I could actually put them on myself? And she was very nice about it, and no, I wasn't allowed to put them on myself. A makeup lady did it.
Good. I am disappointed in you. Well, let's talk about Adam and Joe.
Yeah.
In the 1990s, did you see Lee and Herring as your big BBC Two rivals?
Well, yeah. we were very jealous of you. I remember being really very envious of the fact that you, to us, you seemed like the mainstream, like the established comedians. There was a magazine at the time called Deadpan, I think, and you were on the cover of that. And I remember very clearly the headline. There was a picture of you guys sort of walking down the street like a couple of rock stars, and it said, "Attack, attack, attack! All hail the new heroes of comedy," or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just thought, fuck. Those bastards.
And then next
issue deadpan won't bust. It's literally, I think it's the only front cover I've ever been on of anything.
it lasted a few, and I remember being very impressed by that, and then impressed by the levels of ingenuity in your TV show. And I think we wanted to do a thing where we had flash frames of information at the end of the parts of our show just before the ad break, but then you guys did exactly the same thing very cleverly, and then we agonized for ages, like, shit, where this is just going to be like a total rip-off of Lee and Herring, what are we going to do? And I mean, it was, but then I think we talked to a few people, and it was one of those things where people just said, oh, don't worry,
no one watches.
But it was, I mean, we very much felt like, shit, we're kind of ripping them off, really.
What we wanted to do, what I wanted to do, but we weren't allowed to do in the end, was to use, because I wanted it to be so multi-layered, that Fist of Fun,
yeah,
that I wanted to have CFAX subtitles, which were dead... said different things than the actual show.
Yeah.
I was prepared to go and write like completely different CFAX subtitles in a completely different show.
Well, that was the thing.
But they wouldn't let us do it. They said if we could, there was a point where they said, well, you can only do it if you have the actual thing as well, because it won't be fair on people who are deaf.
Right.
It's sort of like a joke on the deaf if you just... But that's, I kind of like the idea, but then it would just have been literally the whole screen would have been the real thing, and the fight would have been a bit too confusing probably.
Yes, I did a video called Signing for the Deaf, with sort of mistranslations of what a signing guy was saying, and there was quite a few deaf people who were very irritated by it,
right,
probably with good reason. But anyway, no, we were very jealous, but we shared the same desire to you know, make it as dense as possible.
Yeah.
You know, like to cram as much stuff in as we could. Like, we always loved the fact that The Simpsons had so many little jokes going on in the background.
Yeah,
And tiny little details and stuff. And I think we related to that the same way that.
Well,
you
we just had. Well, so we've brought all of our stuff out on DVD. Eventually, it's available from gofasterstripe.com.
Good job.
But we kind of did want to. I mean, there was so much, we had way too much stuff. I think that was the problem with Fist of Fun in the end. Actually, that we didn't,
yeah, I mean,
we couldn't fit it all in. It was all too long. We had to take loads of stuff out of it, and it didn't all fit.
Well, you're your own worst enemy in a lot of the time, aren't you? Because it alienates a lot of people, I think, in the end. And I remember when Trigger Happy TV came out and did very well, me and Joe were sort of envious of his crossover success. But and we sort of thought, fuck, you know, he's had the guts to just, and this is not to damn with faint praise, but he's had the guts to do one thing really well. He's just done that one thing kind of over and over again in different ways.
Yeah.
And that is how you sort of engage with people's imagination, and it gets inside their head and becomes a kind of popular meme, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whereas... But we never really could have done that, you know. We always wanted to just do as many little complicated, stupid, prattish, obscure, in-jokey things as we could. So,
oh well, I didn't really like what you were doing. didn't really know you were on that, did I? Just think you mess around with toys and stuff.
I'm sure we bitched about each other to our own respective partners at the time.
I think it's kind of an odd thing, because the thing we did really bitch about was the 11 o'clock show, which we really hated.
Yeah. Why did you hate it?
Just because it seemed so rubbish and late. I mean, most of it, and the stuff that people remember was good, which was Ali G, and which took me a little while to get into, and there was, you know, it was just Ali G, but it just seemed.
What about Ricky Gervais when he started?
I didn't really
it?
See any of his stuff. I've seen like his chat. Was it a chat show he did first of all?
Oh yeah, that wasn't very good. But no. I remember some of the things that he did on the 11 o'clock show were sort of.
But good. That was kind of later, wasn't it? That was sort of because they were. I think the thing we envied actually was just that the Channel 4 got so behind it, the 11 o'clock show, and the BBC really hated us and didn't get behind us, and
right.
We kind of got taken off the air and then reluctantly renewed, and even now when we're trying to put the DVD out, they're kind of cutting things out of it, and so it's all kind of, you know, they just didn't like us, whereas the 11 o'clock show, just however bad it was, the Channel 4 relentlessly put it out again and again and again until it got good, or until bits of it got good.
Well,
so I think we envied that, really.
We had this thing that called the Lame Pranksters that we used to do on our show on like the last series that we did. That was basically the 11 o'clock show of just going out. I remember there was one thing that Daisy Donovan, was
yeah.
she called? Went out and she would, she had a bit of shit on a microphone.
Right.
And she would sort of thrust it under people's noses, and that was it. It was like, will they talk to her even with a bit of shit on the microphone? It's like, well, yes, because most people are generally nice. And they want to be nice.
Yeah.
So, what a bunch of twats.
Yeah. Well, then the Channel 4 thing did, you know, Balls of Steel, which was then 10 times worse, and that kind of, it was just horrible things of nice people doing decent things being treated like they were idiots.
Yeah, exactly. fucking moron, you fell for it. Yeah.
And that was mainly about putting shit places, as far as I can remember. Anyway, people don't seem to like us having a go at terrible television. So let's stop doing that. You did some stunty things, like that, I suppose, that were those in that area. The very funny thing of the eating the free 25%.
20% free.
Yeah.
That was good, although we weren't really cut out for it. You know, we were seeing all these things happening on TV elsewhere and thinking, shit, we should do that. That's what people like. But we weren't really good at it. You know, most of the time, if I was filming it, my hand was shaking so much that a lot of the footage was barely usable. I think there's even one bit where Joe actually steadies the camera and says, easy, man. And I remember being quite annoyed about that. It's like, well, I'm fine. I'm cool. I'm totally cool. But that was a walk in the park compared to this thing called You Break It, You Pay For It that we did, where someone pointed out to us that some, you know, shops have signs that say You Break It, You Pay For It, right? Like if it's a China shop or knock something over, you have to pay for it. So we went to this shop in the Cut near Waterloo, if you know that, and China shop. And so we went in there with hammers. And we smashed up as many things as we could. While this lady, like an old lady who was working there behind the counter, quaked with fear and called the police. As you fucking would. If two wankers came into your shop with hammers and started smashing things up. And one of the wankers was filming it. We'd okayed it with the manager of the shop, but the lady who was working there didn't know anything about it. Yeah, exactly. Oh. Poor woman was really upset. And it was horrible. It was a horrific experience. And we knew it was going to be horrible before we did it, but we had like 6 minutes that we had to fill. We'd run out of toy movies or whatever. That was the thing. It used to take us so long to do the toy movies that the rest of the show, we just had to do any old bollocks. And then, so we did it. It was absolutely awful. And the cops turned up. And then, and this guy turned up as well, who was a friend of the manager or whatever. And he didn't know what was going on. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Fuck off. Fucking stop filming. I might fucking smash that camera in your face, you twat. And I was shitting my pants. And then the cops turn up. And then we had to say, I'm so sorry, officers. We're doing a TV show. It's comedy show for Channel 4. Adam and Joe show. Really sorry. It's a prank. It's like a prank. It's like a fun prank. We had to sit there with the lady for hours and hours. And we went and we sort of bought everyone drinks afterwards and tried to say apologise. But it was horrific.
Did you write a letter to apologise?
Actually, we didn't, but we should have done. I mean, probably now she could sue, I would think. And, she could reasonably
trauma.
Sue, for emotional distress with good reason. It was awful. And after that, I just think... we didn't want to use it, but in the end, we literally had to use it because we didn't have enough stuff to go on the show. But I'm ashamed of it, you know, and... wish that we'd never done it.
I think you're to blame. I think the 11 o'clock show and the Balls of Steel saw that, thought, let's do a whole series of that, just smashing people's stuff they've taken ages making.
Yeah.
And then just chuck some. It is kind of Bullingdon Club, really, isn't it? It's like David Cameron and Boris Johnson kind of people. They were there. Going into restaurant and smashing it up and then just going, there's your fucking money.
But is it different if you film it? That's the question.
Well, it's kind of more stupid because then you're incriminated within it, whereas at least David Cameron can pretend he had nothing to do with that. No.
Because if, like, when Jackass came out, I was sort of, reluctantly admiring some of the things that they did that I would never have the balls to do.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the time, still, I felt it came down to that thing of, well, just people are being nice and you're being twats.
Indeed, and song wars is fantastic. Quickly, just want to. I mean, it must take you so long to do those in the end. It must have been ridiculous. But there's two things, because I was watching a video. We had the same thing. But what I love at the end of the birthday song you did.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very light birthday song.
Yeah, it's like...
I wanted to play it when we had the Six Music Show and they didn't have a copy of it anyway, which seemed ridiculous because it was from the same show. Just at this quite jolly song. And then at the end, you just say, why can't we live forever? Which I just think... I just think it's the funny, it makes me laugh every time. Just like the idea of having a birthday song.
ends with an existential yell.
Yeah. Why can't we live forever? Yeah.
Why can't we live forever?
That's it.
It was supposed to be like Brian Wilson crying out in agony at the prospect of his impending mortality.
But they're just there are things that you can listen to, and a lot of the song wars are like that. It's like Tim Minchin's song about which I talked to him about the song for Phil Doust. Have you heard that, where he does
it?
Oh man, I think I talked to him about it, but it's just about a bad review he got from Phil Doust in The Guardian, and then he wrote it 3 years later, and it's just this kind of full on kind of destruction of this journalist. And
I'm going to be a twat and make a note of that.
Listen out for it. It's fantastic. Tim Minchin. One of your songs that you did on the Art Sky Show. Ends, why can't life just be all the nice parts? So you kind of like to end songs.
That's right. That was a little bit of a repeat. No, I changed it, I think, for the bug video version that we did. Originally, it ended with me talking about I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Right.
And I thought that was too niche a reference. I wanted it to, you know, really be understood by everyone across the world. And because of that, I think it's got the lowest number of views of any video I've ever done.
I like it. I like the philosophy.
Counting song. Thanks, man.
Mike Stover.
Well, that's a viral smash a modest viral smash. But thanks to Syriac, really, because he's got like millions of fans, and quite rightly so. So more or less everything he does goes viral. We were kind of coasting on his coattails. But, no, it's good. I was pleased with that in the end. The End is Dark. When I sing it to my daughter sometimes... So I genuinely sing it to my daughter, who's 4 years old. And, like, when I read her a story and then she says, I have to sing her a song. And for a long time, I would sing The Laughing Gnome by David Bowie. And then after a while, she got tired of that and I'd have to start customising it and say The Laughing Gnome Princess... and then after a while she got tired of that, and then I was like reaching for anything that I could sing her, and I started singing the counting song to her, and which ends with, how does it end? With me sort of saying, oh yeah, and then suddenly you die. She said, I don't like that bit, Daddy. Those words aren't very good. I want, next time you sing it, change those words. So, yeah, I'm having to customise it when I sing it to her.
But if you get onto YouTube or whatever and start looking, you get just trapped for... I mean, A, I kind of have to watch them all back about 10 times because they're so... I don't know how you manage to do this. It's annoying when people have a genuine talent, I think. I don't think that's... As a comedian, I don't find that is fair. I think you've got to try and work with what you've got, and you can do these amazing videos that are genuinely amazing, and songs that are really catchy. It's ridiculous. But anyway, an emergency question... if Frankie Boyle is the Mick Jagger of comedy, the outspoken voice of disenfranchised youth dehumanised by the press and feared by parents nationwide, if he is that and Mick Jagger is that, or Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger.
Yeah. And Dave Gorman is Ringo Starr, an everyman well-known providing entertainment in a variety of guises, but still gives the impressions he'd be incredibly polite if he ever met your mother, if Dave Gorman is that and Ringo Starr is that, then who are you? And what attributes do neither you or the person you are like have? If. And so I'm not asking who are you like.
Right, it's all...
I'm asking if Frankie Boyle is Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And Dave Gorman is Ringo Starr, but the Mick Jagger is like that and the Ringo Starr is like that. Then who are you and what are you and they like if that is the case? Quite a hard question.
Fucking hell.
It's a new emergency question.
Well, Okay, well, I can say then that he's Boyle is not like Mick Jagger.
Well, so, but if he is like Mick Jagger...
That's not what you said.
It is. You have to accept that this is the case.
Oh, that's the premise.
If Frankie Boyle is Mick Jagger, and right. Mick Jagger is like that...
Okay.
So he's not Mick Jagger or right. Mick Jagger. He's just a bloke who's like that. And Frankie Boyle is like him.
Yeah.
And Dave Gorman is like Ringo Starr, but he's like a Ringo Starr who's nothing like Ringo Starr.
Right,
then
exactly.
Who are you like, and why, and in what ways are you... What... Who are you like, yeah. If those things are true, and what attributes do neither you or the person you like have?
I'm just going to go.
And then I have to write that whatever you say down, and then next week that is part of the question as well.
I think I actually gave this some thought before I even knew about that review.
Right.
Like years ago, I remember thinking about what comedians, like if comedians were like bands, what bands would they be like? And I remember thinking that you and Stuart would be like The Fall. And so what would we be like? I remember thinking me and Joe would be like Shed 7.
And what kind of Shed 7 would they be? You would be half of Shed 7.
I'd be Rick Witter.
So you'd be Shed 3.5.
Yeah.
You'd be Rick Witter.
I'd be Rick Witter. Joe would just be the other Sheds.
Okay. And how would you describe Rick Witter?
Garden Shed. Rick Witter, how would you describe him?
If Frankie Boyle is... So now, if Frankie Boyle's Mick Jagger, and Mick Jagger's like that,
right?
And Dave Gorman's Ringo Starr, and Ringo Starr's like that, you are Rick Witter, but what are you like that's not like Rick Witter? If you say anything that is like Rick Witter, we'll have to start. If anything you say is recognisably something that Rick Witter is like, I don't know him that well, but we will have to start again with a new person. So think very carefully about your next move. I'm ready.
Handsome, dark skinned.
Handsome. That, yeah. I think it's all right if some of the things are... Because some of the things that Ringo Starr is like, Dave Gorman is a bit like.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay... I think it's okay if some of the... I'm not saying you're handsome.
Yeah.
But it's okay if some of the things aren't you. But I don't think any of them can be things that you'd recognise.
A sort of faded facsimile of something good.
And would you be able to take that person home to meet your mother, do you think, or would it?
Yeah.
Who you could introduce to your mother. Thank you.
Who you could introduce to your mother. Although your mother would probably say afterwards, who is that twat?
Okay, good.
Nothing against Rick Witter. He's a very talented man.
Well, no, it's not. This is the opposite.
Exactly.
What you're actually saying is you couldn't...
Exactly.
Rick Witter, you couldn't introduce to your mum, and your mum wouldn't be able to say anything because she wouldn't have met him. Yeah. I've got to write this down, so... Good, that will come, and Russell Howard will be asked about that. And so it will go on. In the end, it'll become like a sort of Norse story, the whole podcast. In the end, there'll be so much information to get through in this, I'll probably have to start before the podcast, I'll be in the dressing room going, I've just got to prep you with the long story of what all the comedians are like.
I'll have to read the Bible of the show beforehand.
And what if I get Frankie Boyle on, or Mick Jagger or Ringo Starr?
Sweet Jesus, the whole thing would implode.
If you are, I'd have to say, Matt Frankie, if you are Mick Jagger... Good, well, it's good to have that. And I don't know how long we've done.
94.
Wow, we're going for the record.
Come on, then. Let's
should we press on?
I've got to get up at 7 a.m. No, I've got to get up at 6 to be on set at 7.
Ooh.
For Kevin Eldon's
show. Oh, I'm doing Kevin Eldon's
show.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be a caveman tomorrow.
See, it's like Kevin Eldon, all the stuff I did with him, and he never asked me to do anything. And then he asked you from the...
Yeah, but
thing.
I've asked him. He's been in.
He's been in.
Stuff
I've created.
Yeah.
I wrote him. He was the only real person. maybe. I could have been a caveman. I could have been a caveman.
Yeah, I know, but... Yeah. Come on.
So how's the new Six Music show going?
Yeah, really good.
I've listened to...
It's just a first... I've just done the first one.
Yeah. Back on Six Music.
Back on Six
back
Music.
Back in the traditional Collins and Herring spot. Everyone knows it as that.
I know.
We kind of made it our own, and people said, let's try and replace one of Collins Herring with someone else. I know which. Should we replace Herring? Yes, everyone. That's what everyone would want. So it's quite... It's sort of similar... What they've done with you. So, that's...
yeah. I mean, a lot of people said to me, why don't you co-host with Rich?
Yeah. Look, we talk about we a lot.
Right. And I said, no. He's a very bitter guy. We just end up talking about him and his hang-ups, and I don't want to do that. No, I... People are laughing because that's true. I just thought it would be... I sort of instinctively felt that it was a stupid idea to do it with someone who was in any way like Joe. So I was sort of going as far away from that as possible. I thought it would be... You know, I had a kind of residually good impression of Edith, having heard her and seen her around, and thought she was a nice person, and thought it would be good to do the show with a lady, woman... And so, you know, I mean, I feel a bit of a twat in some ways, because it's like going back in that same slot just feels a bit daft, really, because it just sort of begs comparison to the stuff, the show as it was with Joe. But it's like, you know, the show with Joe was sometimes good, but sometimes it was pretty stupid and rubbish as well. So if there are moments that are good for the next 7 weeks with Edith, then that'll be good. I mean, the fact is that I just miss doing it so much, you know, and I love doing it so much with Joe, and unfortunately Joe's now so busy that he can't do it.
Believe me, when the year we were in that slot, people wanted the, I think they would have been happy with one of you, maybe just half of one of you, even the lower half of one of you. Just farting into a microphone, maybe. They've been very happy. Well, so I'm sure people have been very happy. Do you not think of doing... I mean, it's so close, this already, to being Adam and Eve, that you could you have not just... The only person I could think of, though, if you want, is Eve Pollard.
Eve Pollard. Well, I don't know. Maybe
I
that
can't
would
think
have been
of
amazing.
Any other Eves. I mean, apart from Eve from the Bible, but that would be...
Yeah,
I mean that would add a kind of new layer to the joke. Oh, it's Adam. Hey, it's us, Adam and Eve. And it is actually Eve. I mean, you know, it sounds like a joke thing, but I've actually tracked down Eve.
That's right, the first
and
lady.
She's.
And instead,
I mean, really, it should have just got Adam as well. He was there. It was a bit embarrassing.
A sort of cheeky snake instead of Boggins.
Yeah.
well, or Trevor Eve.
Oh, Trevor Eve. Yeah.
I think
you've got to do it. Can you just do one episode? Still pay Edith Bowman. Maybe she could be there as well, but then it's you and Trevor.
let's make it happen.
Okay, you're not allowed to talk about Shoestring. That has to be part of the rule. It could go for Eve. I've got some Evas, so it would still be Adam and Eva.
Right.
Eva Herzegovina, whatever her name is.
Longoria.
Bosnia Herzegovina. Longoria. Braun, Eva Braun from.
Oh, yeah. I could probably do good Hitler.
Eva Six from the 1950s sort of beach films.
When did you write these ideas down?
She's probably dead. Eva Cassidy, she is dead. I've also written down, I don't know why. I've just seen this. I've written, do it in the nude. I guess because Adam and Eve were naked. I guess that's why I wrote that. I don't remember writing that. But that might be a separate note, to be honest.
That, you know, that's not a bad idea.
When I get home tonight, ideas for sex with my wife. In the new reminder, I've got a little dictaphone. Ideas.
Darling, I've had an idea.
Wrote it down.
I thought tonight, you could remove our clothes.
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you get on? You're a shortish man. I'm guessing no.
Maybe
that makes it easier because it's nearer.
I got a bit.
A little bit. I could do a little bit.
Yeah. Don't want to be too graphic about it, but, you know, I've got extending powers.
I have. We've all got those.
Yeah, but extension capabilities. Yeah, sure. It's a fun thing to do if you're a guy. I mean, it's at a certain point, you think, obviously, that would be good.
Yeah.
So, let's try. I guess women don't do that, do they? No. Do women have
there
the same...
There are some women here.
Do women have the same... I mean, you're led to believe in pornographic films that women, some women, just love licking their breasts.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't know if that's really true. Do women have the same compulsion to reach their breasts as men do with their willies?
Well, it's easier to do. I mean, it's not...
I'm looking some now
of the, for
at some
people,
women.
It's easier to do. For the larger-breasted lady, it's more of a possibility, I suppose. Sometimes for a
yeah, but if
smaller
you're...
breast, I suppose it's like I've got no breasts. Well, I've got a small breast.
Oh, yeah.
I like the way I'm holding the microphone to this. I can't do it.
I've got quite large breasts. Yeah. Well, you probably haven't been watching I'm a Celebrity, have you?
No, not really. Well, I saw a little bit last night, but
Eric Bristow's got amazing tits.
Has he?
He could easily lick those if he so wished.
It's an interesting thing. So he's just doing 7 weeks of the Six Music. Will you be back after those 7 weeks?
Who knows?
Is it too early to say?
I don't know. Yeah, who knows?
You seem like you're not happy, but I think I didn't listen
no,
to,
I
listened
I mean,
to
I,
some of it and it was good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, it just feels weird. It just feels daft. And I was I think I sort of wanted to do it and agreed to do it at a moment where I was feeling super confident. And then when you're faced with the reality of the thing, you just think, oh, God, you know, I don't want to do a really bad job, you know. And it's difficult. And because suddenly you're having to get to know someone live on air as well. And it's very difficult for Edith as well to come into that position. And, you know, both of us reading tweets from a lot of people sort of saying, why are you doing this? You're trampling on the sacred grave of our... favorite this or that, and, you know, so you think, oh dear, you're suddenly aware of all people's opinions and stuff, so it makes you self-conscious. But as far as I'm concerned, it's an excuse to do some more jingles and write a couple more songs.
You can do those anyway. You can just do them and put them out. That's why this is like a radio show.
Yeah,
I just put out myself.
But it's nice to be forced to do things. You know what I mean? And so
I can force you if you like. I can hold your children I'll put them in a nice prison.
Of course,
and then
I forgot about
I'll release one every time you do something that I consider to be good enough.
A good jingle. A good podcast jingle.
Yeah. And you could have that as part of the jingle. You could play the jingle and then you could play a tape of the child being released from and sort of running back into your arms, kind of crying, going, why? They treated me very well, but why did you do that, Daddy?
Why did you do that, Daddy?
I was trying to listen, but then you could go, but listen to the jingle.
Listen to the jingle. Come on, calm down. I'll sing you the counting song. It'll all be fun.
So, and did you ever get to fight Tomo Thompson? He's in New York now. You offered to fight... The director,
Mark Thompson,
yeah,
the DG. No, he looked appalled when I suggested that I had a fist fight with him.
And now, because the director generals of the BBC are all to blame for everything that happened in the 1970s of the BBC,
yeah, exactly.
If you went and punched him, I don't think there'd be a person in the land who wouldn't applaud you for what you've done.
The current director general? Is it you?
There's no one now. I thought I might give it a go. We did apply, I think, to be the director general. Yeah. We applied for a few jobs when we were Lee and Herring. We definitely applied for the controller of Radio 1. but I think we did apply to be director general.
I never fought Mark Thompson, though, answer your question.
Deserves it, I reckon. I think.
I mean, the bottom line was that he was very happy to see Six Music closed down. And sort of grudgingly allowed it to remain open when there was a sufficient weight of public outcry. I would have very happily scrapped with him. There should be, I think there should be more, you know, that's how things should be settled in general.
It would have been great if that had been the way it had been decided. If Mark Thompson could beat you at a fight,
yeah,
then Six Music would be, would actually have ended.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
If you beat him.
That's right. Yeah. A really pathetic, girly fight with a lot of scratching and slapping.
I think we should still do it. Yeah. Let's put Six Music on the line, even though he's nothing to do with it.
Fly me out to New York.
Are you working on the New York Times? You could do a fight where it's the New York Times versus Six Music. Whoever wins the fight, their thing survives.
Right, and the other one has to
you
close
could
down.
I mean, the New York Times will close down. It's a newspaper. It's got no fucking chance. So, look, I think we've done pretty well. And I've nearly asked you everything I wanted to ask you. We sometimes throw it open to the audience. It's a stupid thing to do because they ask really irritating questions that you don't want to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to throw it open to the audience?
Well, it depends. If they're happy to do that, yes.
Or I mean, you can go home anytime you want. It's kind of, you know, that. So don't feel you have to stay.
Can we stand up? I'm now sort of semi-desperate to go to the toilet.
So we can stop. You can go to the toilet. I can talk about how I felt. We can end. I mean, we've easily done enough, but let's maybe take... You can be in that box. You can go back behind that curtain. Has anyone got a question for Adam Buxton? There's a man here with a beard. Make it a good one. Got to be as good as my questions.
If you could control how famous you were, would you make yourself astronomically famous, or do you actually make your
own thing? If you could control how famous you are, would you make? Where would you turn the dial of famousness? Would you make yourself astronomically famous? Would you be less famous? Which would you do if you could? If you could control it, and if your kids were in prison while you were making the decision.
I would. I'd make myself.
It's a good question.
Yeah, very good question.
Well done. That's the best. No, no more extra. Together. It's not the fucking your. Whatever your name is, Leicester Square Theatre podcast, is it? No one knows who you are. It's the Richard Herring Leicester Square Theatre. I've let you ask one question. Yeah, you haven't even fucking answered it yet. You're useless in Liverpool. You're doing so well. Suddenly you got cocky because they said, "Well done." Oh, I've got another one. If you could magic up a cake, what would it be? It's not a good question. The second question was rubbish.
I would dial it down.
It would be less famous, even less famous. that's like less because... famous than an ordinary member of the public. People are not recognising you and
because,
like, become invisible or something.
Because occasionally getting recognised in record shops is ruining my life.
What was your second question? It was such a good question.
I was just going to say, I fucking love you, Adam.
Oh, thanks, man. Let's have a hug outside.
Yeah, that's a bit... That's not even a question, is it? It's a statement. He loves you, though. That's nice. Well, he's done well. Has anyone else got a question for Adam Buxton before you... Remember, the longer we can keep this going, the more uncomfortable he becomes. The pressure on his bladder, and the answers might become more interesting.
With the best will in the world, they must be desperate to
go
and have a drink.
Mary Jane. Can you tell us your favourite Radiohead anecdote?
Okay, this is a new anecdote.
Okay.
The other day I was at a party... And there was a traffic situation there. Tom York was at the party. Mm-hmm. And everyone was trying to park. And there was a build-up of cars. And there was... no one could get by this very narrow lane. And it turned out there was an old lady who was too frightened to back her car up because it was dark. So I got out and I helped her back her car right down the lane so everyone could get by. But Tom... didn't realise that I was trying to help. And I had apparently not left enough passing room where I'd left this lady's car. And he fucking went mental at me. Adam! No one can get by! Fucking hell! He was genuinely pissed off.
Wow.
And I nearly cried. A, because I was so humiliated and felt such a keen sense of injustice that I was being so chivalrous to help this lady and now I was being shouted at by one of my heroes. And B, because it was just a generally embarrassing situation.
It's embarrassing, that's what happens.
And
say never meet your heroes, but they also say never try and help your heroes out
in a parking situation. In an incredibly stressful parking situation.
Cool. Very good. I think there's one more question just before.
Surely not.
Just one more question. I think there's a person over there, humanoid over there. I can't see. I think it's a lady.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'll have to repeat the question. Shout it out, though. Ooh, that's like a proper question.
When did I play a superhero on
TV? It's like fucking Michael Parkinson's. And you played a superhero on TV, apparently.
In
you
no that... heroic, sweet Christ, I'd forgotten that even happened.
No. And also in the in your face, you're a superhero.
Yes, sounds like a superhero.
What would be your superpower in real life if you could have a superpower?
What do you think? I would be Key Wallow. My superpower would be the ability to locate keys and wallets.
Ah. Very good. Well, thank you very much. I think we'll let you go to the loo. We've had a nice long time.
Thanks, man.
It's gone on ages, and it's like being in Vietnam or something, isn't it?
Under the lights.
It's
as
really
well.
Hot. The back of my head is I've touched my hair. It's like I'm.
It's burning.
Like, I wish. I'm glad you chose the sun cream. We can use that now. I know you didn't.
Hair.
You chose the hand. Thank you to Adam Buxton. Our next, we've got 2 weeks, and then Russell Howard on the 3rd of December for the final one of these. There's still a few tickets for left for that one, so do come along and support this if you can. Do support us. This is free for you at home, so do buy some of our stuff. But for the moment, will you please give it up for the incredible Adam Buxton. Camp Buckley.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. With me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Adam Buxton. The music is by Pest. Thanks to Orange Mark and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. It's only him. There's Aaron. Aaron's there as well. And Ian Tunes at iTunes. It was produced by Ben Walker. It's a Fuzz and Sky Potato production for the internet. Thank you for listening. How'd you like them Sky Potatoes? I hope you have enjoyed listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. If you have, it's free, isn't it? It's nice. But if you want to give something back, Christmas is coming. You can buy some wonderful gifts for yourselves or those that you love. Fist of Fun Series 2 is now out at www.gofasterstripe.com. That's the second series, 4 discs, loads of extras. We just had a printing error, so it may take a few days to get to you, but you'll get it before Christmas. You can get What Is Love Anyway there and all my other DVDs. What Is Love Anyway has a video, Me 1 versus Me 2 snooker tournament in it. I am on tour with Talking Cock at Newbury on the 29th and Windsor on the 30th. You can get the details of that and all the rest of the tour in 2013 at www.richardherring.com/talkingcock2. So do come along and buy those tickets if you like. They're a perfect Christmas gift. Who wouldn't want a Talking Cock ticket in their stocking? Nice Talking Cock. And producer Ben has produced 2 other podcasts you can listen to. Pappy's Flat Share Slam Down is now available. All the whole series is out there. Very funny, boys. And also Do the Right Thing will be starting. The new series will be starting on the 28th of November. That one will be released. That first episode stars me. I am in it. I'm very, very funny indeed. And Paul Foot. So why not download that? And that is also free, but don't give them anything else. That is for free. Thank you for listening. Have a happy Christmas. And we'll be back with Russell Howard on December the 3rd. Still some tickets left.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.